Welcome to the show. I'm Jordan Harbinger. As always, I'm here with my producer, Jason DeFilippo. Today, we're talking with Charles Rue. This is an incredible story. He escaped by himself from North Korea twice. And this is a show I thought would take an hour, ended up going for three, which is why it's a two-part episode. Those of you who don't know much about North Korea, this is a place where you can get sent to a labor camp for folding a newspaper incorrectly or for watching a movie that wasn't made by the government. I mean, they can execute you for this stuff. Charles is a great storyteller, and what strikes me here is how he stayed strong through this whole ordeal. He didn't give in to resentment, nor did he give up in a situation that would have pretty much given anyone a license to do that. The story of Charles' escape is absolutely incredible. There's so much in here that's both shocking, inspiring, even emotional, that I really think you'll enjoy hearing this episode as much as we enjoyed recording it. And by the way, if you want to know how I managed to book all these great people and manage my relationships using systems and tiny habits, check out our Level 1 course, which is free, over at advancedhumandynamics.com/level1. It's minutes a day, and trust me, this is one of the highest leverage activities you can have in your life. And don't forget, we have worksheets for today's episode, so you can make sure you solidify your understanding of all the key takeaways here from Charles. That link is in the show notes at jordanharbinger.com/podcast. All right, here's Charles Rue. So you just had a very American experience.
Yeah, I did. I met a shack, you know. It's a surprise, you know. I've never expected to meet a really, really famous, you know, celebrity basketball player, but it's been a really good experience.
Yeah.
I couldn't close my jaw. I was like,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Did you know who Shaq was when you were in North Korea?
I didn't know who Shaq was when I was in North Korea, but I knew who was James Bond. Yeah.
Really?
When I was in North Korea, I was like a huge fan of Hollywood films, you know, like 007, like action movies. You know, actually, I watched Will Smith, like the Bad Boys 1 when I was in North Korea.
Really? Is that popular in North Korea, Bad Boys?
It is super popular, like among like millennials, you know, among these fellow North Koreans friends that I had. Yeah, it's really popular.
And you just became an American citizen.
Yeah, too. Yeah, I just did. I became like citizen like a couple of days ago.
Wow.
I got my like a certificate. You know, it feels great. Now I'm a fellow American, you know, citizen.
That's crazy. Congratulations, yeah. First of all.
Thank you.
Coming from North Korea, being in America, being an American citizen, does it feel different?
I mean, like, you know, I've been hiding before I came to the United States. You know, I was living under the shadow, you know, for a while. So having, like, my own identity, you know, as, like, defined as something, you know, like, oh, he's American, you know. I mean, like, he's North Korean. I mean, like, you know, I really wanted to have that privilege. Now I got my citizenship finally. Like, I feel like a lot like responsible, you know, in a way, because like now I gotta pay tax.
Now you can cheat and avoid taxes like every other American. You can't. Now you have to. You can't just slide by.
Right.
You've got to figure out creative ways to not pay taxes.
Well, to understand what that means, I think we have to go back a little bit to understand.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, thank you so much for having me here today.
Sure. Yeah.
Where were you born?
I mean, I was born in North Korea on October 1st, 1994, under Chinese father and a North Korean mother.
Wait, I'm already kidding. How did that happen? Where did the Chinese guy come from?
Yeah.
I mean, from China, but more explicitly, how?
So my grandfather was a Chinese soldier, like between like North and South, like when there was a war.
Yeah.
Right? So my grandfather came out to North Korea to fight off, like, I guess, Americans.
Sure.
And then he never returned to China after the war.
So he came for the what we call the Korean War?
Korean War.
Came for the war, stayed for the women.
Stayed for the women, right? How romantic, right? I mean, but one thing that I'm sure was like my grandfather didn't speak any Korean. My grandmother didn't speak any Chinese, but somehow they managed to, you know, live, you know.
And I know how that works. I mean, right, Jen?
Just kidding.
Yeah, and then my grandfather stayed after the war, and then like Kim Il-sung gave out like special privilege to Chinese soldiers that didn't leave to China, and like saying, okay, so once you are gonna be here, we're gonna give you everything, right? Mm-hmm. Privilege to like stay here, or whenever you wanna go back, just we can just leave, right?
As a reward for fighting.
Right, okay. Right. And then my grandfather stayed, and then he had my father. And then my father was a Chinese. He wasn't a Chinese at first, right? So he was North Korean until he turned like 30 or something. He got his passport much later. At the time when my father met my mother, he already had a family.
In China. In North Korea.
Yeah, in North Korea. He had a passport at the time when he met my mother. he was already married. He had 4 kids.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then basically, I was just like born out of wedlock.
Got it.
And then when I turned 5, like my father abandoned me and my mom, and he left to China, bringing all his kids except me.
Oh, man.
Were you aware of everything that was going on back then?
I had no idea.
You just knew that he left.
Yeah, I just knew that, like, oh, he's going to return someday, right? And then when I was, like, 7, I remember my mom telling me, like, okay, you don't tell anybody your dad is Chinese, right? If anybody asks, tell them your dad passed away with a car accident.
Okay.
In the car accident. I was like, okay. I'm like, I'm a kid. I don't know anything.
Did you have a car?
We didn't have any cars, but like just car accident, you know, like, sure. Cause like North Korea, like you rarely find cars. You know?
So it seems like a bad excuse if there's not that many cars.
Yeah. Right?
How many car accidents?
I guess you say that and people don't ask questions.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what was the idea behind that? Why did she want you to lie?
Because like she didn't want it people asking questions, right? The reason behind it is that at the time, like my father was living with my family. Like he divorced his wife because of my mom and they're still living together. And then when I was 5, he borrowed like a bunch of money from the neighbors using our name and he bought opium. And then so his idea was, okay, so opium in North Korea is really cheap because we grow them, right? But in China, it's illegal, but expensive because nobody has it. So the idea behind it was I can just do this once. If I sell it in China, make money, it's going to be rich. You know,
pay,
it's going
to
be
the neighbors back.
Yeah. Yeah. Pay the neighbors right. back. So he went to China. Like my mom told me before she died, like, oh yeah, my father was like, oh, I'll be back in like the next 6 months. And then he left. After 6 months, we didn't hear anything back from my father. And then debt collectors started to come to our house.
Oh man.
Yeah. And then like beating the crap out of my mom.
Oh, so this is like black market.
Yeah. Black market.
This like, is a big deal.
Yeah. It's loan really sharks. Big deal. Yeah.
What is a North Korean debt collector like? Who is that?
Like a mafia guy kind of?
No, it's not mafia guys. It's just a neighbors. You know, neighbors, like debt collectors means like neighbors, like husband, right? They're like wife, husbands, you know, like husbands always come, right?
So it's the people he borrowed money from.
Yeah. So they came to our house, you know, they started taking our things, you know, such as like dishes, you know, clothing and like a cooking pot, rice pot. And at the end, like they took our house.
They just kicked you guys out.
Yeah, like get the hell out of here, you know. And then we lost everything. And then we went to my grandmother's house when I was 7. And that's when my mom told me, so if anybody asks, tell them your dad has died in the car accident. And then, you know, I seriously like grew up like without, I have no memories of my dad, you know, cause I was such a young, you know, 5 years old. I don't remember anything about my father. And like, cause over the time, like I must keep hearing my dad is dead, you know, mm-hmm. like he's, I barely heard of him. But yeah, and then I was living with my grandmother from age 7 to 11, and my mom is always traveling around the world, around the country to find my dad because like he's out there somewhere, you know, I know it.
Mm-hmm. Was your grandmother in the same city?
Yeah, same city as my father.
So you
did.
Within the same city you moved to your grandmother's house, but uh-huh. your mom started going around the country.
Uh-huh.
Is that doable? Can people move around the country just to look for somebody?
Actually, you can't do that because you have to have like a document,
like a special pass.
Mm-hmm. But during like early 2000s, that was kind of easier because a lot of people, like that was like after Great Famine, approximately 300,000 to 1 million people were starved to death in North Korea. But during that time, like the traveling is kind of like a lot easier than nowadays.
Interesting. Because,
yeah. Okay. Nowadays, like you have to have a travel document, you know, but I'm not saying that it was like really easy. You can just get on a train. It's not like that, but you still have to get like travel documents, you know, like passport, not a passport, but like
a visa or something.
Yeah, visa, yeah. Right?
To move around. So you need documents to move around, but it
right.
was easier back then.
Because, yeah, easier back then to get.
Because
yeah.
around a million people starved to death.
Right.
So the people who were enforcing movement
yeah,
were
right.
busy with other things.
Right, right, right. Exactly.
Wow. Okay. So she's off.
Yeah, she's off. I don't know where she's at. And then I'm, you know, going to school in North Korea when I enrolled in elementary school when I was like 8. And I remember going to school with like different pair of shoes, you know, one side on a winter shoes, one side on a summer like a rain boots.
Wait, so you had one different shoe on each foot?
Yeah, because I was so poor, you know, I got like nothing. Yeah, and then I'm going to school. I'm learning about Kim Il-sung, Kim Jong-il's history, you know, like math, like North Korean language and arts, music, you know, like PE, you know. And then my mom comes back when I was 9 years old.
So she's been gone for 2 years.
Yeah, she's been gone for 2 years, but she comes back completely vegetable. So she's like paralyzed.
Oh, she can't walk or anything?
I mean, she could walk, but she was barely alive.
Why?
I don't know. Cause like she has been starving, stressed, you know, and
she's a different person.
Yeah. She was a completely different person. And then, she had a heart trouble. Mm. So she couldn't breathe that well. But, yeah, she comes back when I was 9 and then.
Do you remember that day?
I do.
What was that like?
You know, I went to school and I came back and I saw, a pair of shoes that was ladies. And my grandmother has like, you know, some shoes too, but like, it's not that, you know, fancy looking, but I saw fancy looking shoes in the doormat. And I was like, oh, like, I wonder if it's my mom, mm-hmm. you know? And then I step in the door and my mom is lying down on the ground, you know, almost like dying. And I couldn't talk to her because she couldn't speak or hear or see. She's like completely like paralyzed.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. And then we had to move her to hospital. So we went to hospital, but in North Korea, like hospital and everything is like, it's free, right? That's how the like communist
government,
government runs, right? Cause it's a socialism. Like the method, right? The function itself is like free, but like, actually when you wanted to get it, it's, you have to pay for everything.
So you kind of have to bribe people to give you things that you need. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, you have to kind of bribe out, you know, like bribe in, you know, and you have to buy all your medication and bring it to the hospital so that the doctors can inject them. Because like North Korea is so poor, you know, they don't have any medical, they don't really have good medical, like, you know.
Care.
Yeah, medical care.
So it's not really free.
It's not really free. Yeah, you have to pay.
Okay.
Yeah, and my mother's side grandparents, they were really, really rich. So, they used to be a famous, my grandfather was a magician.
A magician?
Yeah.
Really?
Not magic magician. Oh, musician.
Musician. Yeah, musician. Oh, I was like, yeah. Wow, they have
wow,
magic.
The story just gets better and better. But musician's also pretty
yeah,
big. Okay.
So, he used to play really famous band in North Korea, in Pyongyang, for the government, right?
He played for the government?
Yeah, for the government.
That's actually a really privileged position, right?
Yeah, and my mom was actually born in Pyongyang.
Okay.
Yeah. And then my entire family lived in Pyongyang. Like, government provides, like, everything for them.
That must mean that your mom's family was connected.
Connected
to the government.
Yeah, and then my grandmother, I think, like, maybe, you know, I think, like, the way that I can speak English so well, I mean, like, catch, like, something really well is because I think I got, like, my grandmother's brain. Because mm-hmm. she spoke 3 languages. So she spoke Chinese, Japanese, and Korean. Mm. Yeah, so she's a trilingual. I think she spoke Russian too, but I can't remember.
Interesting.
Yeah, but anyway, yeah. So my grandmother has some money, and we used all onto saving my mom. And then about a year, she was doing much better. She could walk, she could talk, she could eat. And then she could, like, talk to me, you know, like, oh, I missed you, you know. And, like, yeah, and then my grandmother ran out of money. Mm-hmm. So she can't put her in the hospital anymore. So we had to take her back home. That was when I was 10. I completely dropped out of school because I need to nurse my mom, right? Because, like, she cannot move that well. So, like, I need to give her a bath. You know, I need to clean her. You know, I need to take out poop and pee. You know, I have to bring food inside. So I was with her 24 hours.
And you're 10 years old at this point.
I was 10 years old. Jeez. Yeah, yeah.
And you're taking care of your mom.
Yeah.
And your family now doesn't have money.
We don't have any money, and there is no way that we're going to survive this winter. So when I was 10, my mom gets out of the hospital because we don't have any money to treat her. And then we came back home. Like, she seems to be doing really fine. But one day, she collapsed. She just, like, really collapsed on the floor. And then, like, she's paralyzed again. And then she was doing, like, she would, like, wake up unconsciously, you know, and then she would scream, you know, like, ah! I don't know, like, because I think, like, she had a tumor in her head or something.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, and then, like, she would scream at night, you know, because, like, her head really hurts. And then, or so, about a year, I had to still take care of her at home. You know, I have to take out. I need to clean her. I try to feed her, you know, I try to do everything, but last about a month, you know, she couldn't eat. Like, she couldn't even, like, feel anything. She was just lying down there. And then eventually, 2011 May, she passed away. May 5th, she passed away without leaving any last words. And before she died, like, somewhere around, like, when she was, like, conscious, she told me, like, Charles, if I had a whole, like, lamb, you know, I think I'm gonna be doing just fine, you know.
If I had a whole lamb, I would be just fine?
Yeah, if I ate
a whole lamb.
Yeah, whole lamb. Like, I'll be just fine as you are. You know, it means, like, she's starving, you know. Mm-hmm. She's really hungry. That's the last thing that I remember about my mom.
You're listening to The Jordan Harbinger Show with our guest, Charles Rue. We'll be back right after this.
This episode is sponsored in part by The Great Courses Plus. You're listening to this podcast because you're bright, curious, eager to know more. So sign up for The Great Courses Plus. That's where those people hang. Learn about anything that interests you. Fantastic streaming service. And I mean just about anything. They've got like 8,000 classes here. Business, history, science, the arts, cooking, speaking a new language. You can watch them on your TV, laptop, tablet, smartphone, whatever you want to do, or switch from video to audio using the Great Courses Plus app. I recommend checking out Games People Play, Game Theory in Life, Business, and Beyond. A lot of tips in there players use on the field to help make better decisions, and you can apply those to work, home, anywhere else. This is the perfect course to get started with the Great Courses Plus, or check out anything with our special offer here. Sign up for free at thegreatcoursesplus.com/Jordan. That's thegreatcoursesplus.com/Jordan. Support for the Jordan Harbinger Show comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. Let's talk about buying a home. It can be one of the most important purchases you'll ever make. But today's fluctuating interest rates can leave you with unexpected higher payments, which can turn a great experience into an anxious one. And that's why Quicken Loans created their exclusive power buying process. Here's how it works. They check your income, assets, and credit to give you a verified approval. This gives you the strength of a cash buyer, making your offer more attractive to sellers. Once verified, you qualify for their exclusive Rate Shield approval. They lock in your interest rate for up to 90 days while you shop for a new home. Then, once you've found the one, if rates have gone up, your rate stays the same. But if rates have gone down, you get to keep that new lower interest rate. Either way, you win. It's the kind of thinking you'd expect from America's largest mortgage lender.
To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/Jordan. Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply. Based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org number 3030. Thanks for listening and supporting the show. To learn more about our sponsors and get links to all the great discounts you just heard, visit jordanharbinger.com/advertisers. We also have an Alexa skill so you can get inspirational and educational clips from the show in your daily briefing. Go to jordanharbinger.com/Alexa or search for Jordan Harbinger in the Alexa app. Now back to the show with our guest, Charles Rue.
So how did you decide to escape? Because I can imagine that, I mean, this is a place where if you share a foreign movie with your friends, you get executed, you know, or you get punished.
Yeah.
So this isn't a light decision.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how you went from being 10 years old to, you know, you're here in the United States. Obviously, a lot of things happen. I mean, you're growing up with your grandma. Did she raise you?
No, I mean, like, I went to, like, school, like, but when I was 11, she couldn't take care of me anymore. When I was 11, my mom passed away.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, she's an old grandma. You know, she was, like, already, like, 78, you know, almost, like, 8 years old. She couldn't take care of me anymore. So she sent me to my aunt's house. And then I was living there about, like, a year. And then I wrote a letter to my father every single day saying, like, hey, father, you know, because, like, my aunt apparently knows, like, where he is at.
Oh.
In China. So what happened was, like, my father was in China selling drugs, and he sold successfully, but he got backstabbed. So somebody told on him, and then he got caught, and he threw into prison for 4 years in China. Yeah, in China.
But your aunt knew that?
Yeah.
And she didn't tell your mom?
She didn't tell my mom.
Do you know why?
I don't know why.
Okay. And is this your mom's sister?
Yeah, it's my mom's, like, oldest sister.
Jeez.
Wow.
Yeah, and then when I got to my aunt's house, she was forcing me to write a letter to my father every single day for, like, 12 months. And then eventually my father wrote a letter back to me saying nothing, like, critical, nothing much, you know, but, like, so he was just saying thank you so much, right? But my aunt switched the letter saying if you come to China, I'll
wait,
help
she
you.
Changed the letter?
Yeah, changed
How?
The letter.
She physically changed
it? Yeah, she wrote it.
She forged it.
Yeah, she forged it.
Oh,
and then
that's
she
pretty smart, I think.
Oh, my God.
Put it back in the envelope and brought it to the government.
Whoa, right? That is some ninja stuff.
That's
man.
A gutsy move,
in
man.
North yeah, Korea, in she North forged... Korea. Okay, yeah. So she changed your yeah. father's letter
yeah,
to make then, it look like he was inviting you
Yeah,
guys,
inviting.
So the North Korean government would give you a visa.
Did it work?
Yeah. Wow.
It worked. It yeah.
No kidding.
Now she needed money to travel, right? Now she, because she is everything to get a passport.
Is your aunt hoping that all of you guys go to China?
Just her.
Just her.
Jeez. Yeah,
just her. She was going to leave you behind.
Some yeah. desperate shit here.
Yeah, because like my grandmother had a lot of friends in China. So she's not going to China to look for my father, but she's going to look for her mother's friends in China. Mm-hmm. Because my grandmother worked for government. She has a translator between North Korean government and Chinese is government. This- And then she was going to China to find them, you know, not my father. But she just needed a bridge, connection. You know, so I was the connection, which is my father in China. But now she doesn't have any money to go to China. So she writes a blackmail letter to my father saying, if you don't send me this much money, I'm going to kill your child, sell him to the black market as a meat, or I'm going to send him to orphanage. Bam. And my father sees it. What the heck?
You know,
yeah, what?
Well, he didn't care before.
He didn't care before, but like, he's like, yeah, I'm alive, you know, yeah. But like, now, like, my life is in threat, you know, he knows that, like, cause like, I send him like my photos like every single month to yeah. my father.
You
like,
were writing him for a year, you said.
Yeah. About a year, 12
about
months.
About a year. So I now he's sort of connected again to
yeah,
your
connected
story.
Again okay. about like what I'm doing, right. how I'm doing.
Do you know where he was at this time?
He's in China.
So how yeah. close to the border is he?
He's really close to the
Very
border.
Very close to the
yeah,
border.
Yeah, he's living in border region.
And where is your city you were living in with your aunt?
It's right next to Pyongyang.
It's next to Pyongyang. So that's not close to the border.
Uh-uh. It's like really a, far. It's far. It's really far. Okay. 2 days train trip.
Got it.
Yeah, and then my father says it and like, oh, my son is in risk. I need to save him. So he sends two stepbrothers who are like 20 years older than me. They were living in North Korea. I didn't know.
This is his other family.
Yeah, his older family. So he sends like this stepbrother to rescue me from my aunt's house. When I was 13, he comes, he picks me up from
Your
my
stepbrother.
Aunt. Yeah, my stepbrother. And he brings me to his house. And a year later, when I was 14, I didn't, so like that time, like before I escaped to China, that time I was watching like, cause my stepbrother was Chinese and he was bringing a lot of foreign medias.
Mm.
You know, from China to
he
North Korea.
He was going back and forth?
Yeah, he was going back and forth.
Because he has a passport.
He has a passport.
So he can move around as much
he can
as
move,
he wants.
Yeah, whenever he wants.
Got it.
Just have to have money.
So you lived with them for a year?
For a year, yeah. And then that time, like, I watched foreign medias, you know, and like, James Bond, you know, 007, Bad Boys 1, like, South Korean dramas, you know, having all those, like a freedom thoughts, you know, like
yeah, freedom thoughts.
Freedom
yeah,
thoughts.
Yeah.
Is this the first time you've seen foreign movies?
Yeah, that's actually the first time me watching. Like, I mean, like I watch a lot of like Soviet Union movies, so right. propaganda movies, right. you know, Chinese like Motai Dong.
Yeah, but like Will Smith is a million times cooler than
right. Exactly.
So
yeah.
this is new for you.
Yeah, this is like completely new. For
what
me.
Was that like?
Like at first, like I didn't believe. You know, like is this true? Like I mean, like wait. Like, how is this possible, you know? Like, if it's not a setup, you know? Like, all I've learned about Americans are, like, with long nose, you know, long chins, like, hairy face, you know, looks like a wolf, you know, trying to, like, invade North Korea all the time.
Because
know?
That was what you were taught in school.
Yeah, that was what I was taught in school, right? But, like, watching the foreign media, like, they're so cool, you know? Like, stopping the bad guys, you know, getting the money, getting paid, you know? Like, I'm like, wait, what? I was like mind blowing, you know. I wanted to be there, you know. I wanted to like experience that. You know?
So, what goes through your mind when you see that? Is there a period where you think somebody lied to me, or did you think that the movie was lying?
At the moment, I thought movie was.
You
lying,
thought the movie
right?
was lying.
This is
at the
a
moment,
movie set.
Right.
Yeah, it's
with
a movie set.
Everything.
Yeah, yeah, it's a movie set, right? But when I was 14, I get my first opportunity to escape North Korea and go to China. To my father, because my father wanted to see me. So my brother buys a broker in North Korea, and then the broker buys the guard, the river guard.
He's like a people smuggler.
Yeah, people smuggler.
And the plan is for your father to get you to China.
Yeah, plan is to get me to China.
Because the letter that your aunt sent him, right?
Yeah, but I mean, like, that's why my stepbrother came in and he saved me from my aunt's house and he took care of me, right? But my father wants to see me now when I was 14.
So whose idea was it to escape?
My father's idea. Now I went to China, right? So my stepbrother buys broker, and then my stepbrother, then the broker buys the security guard, and then like, okay, what time, you know, during what day, what time, you know, like small kid's gonna go to China and he's gonna come back with money, you know, so don't shoot him. And then I went to Reaper, pretending I'm taking a shower, you know, it's just
like, you went to the river.
Yeah.
Oh, to pretend like you're just going for a swim.
Yeah. So it's going for a swim.
This is
a
the river on the border?
Yeah. It's
is it the Yalu?
Yeah. It's the Yalu River.
Okay. Oh.
So you're far, but you had to take a train to get there.
Yeah. I had to take a train for like 2 days.
Is that hard to take a train?
No. I mean, like, my brother bought, like, you know, tickets and everything.
Okay.
You know, so,
so you guys can move somewhat freely to the border.
Is this a summertime? Cause I would imagine you go in the winter, like, I'm just going for a swim.
Yeah. Right. No, what are you talking about? It's 20 below.
Yeah. It was 2008. June, going down the river, you know, I was like, I'm just humbling, you know, like, you know, like, you know, I'm just gonna go to swim over here, you know, and I was taking a bath, you know, like,
was this the plan?
It was the plan.
They told you to do this.
Yeah.
Are you alone?
Yeah, I was alone. Yeah.
How did you know where to go?
Cause like the broker told me like a couple of days, like in advance, like, okay, so go that way.
Oh,
that's
wow.
the
he
shallow.
He gave you directions.
Yeah, he gave me directions.
So he's like a coyote.
Like, yeah, it's like, he's in a way. Yeah, he's like a coyote. Yeah. And then, I crossed the river, and then like, okay, so some guy with a hat, white hat, and a blue shirt, and the jeans, and like, what kind of shoes? That's your father. Go find him.
So your dad was supposed to meet you?
Yeah. So my dad was in the other side of the China with a taxi cab, right? So as soon as I crossed the river, I saw my dad, and I got into a taxi cab, and we drove straight to hotel. I slept one night, and then the next day, we took like 12 hours bus to a little bit inside of China.
The first night,
yeah,
you're in the hotel,
yeah,
you're in China,
yeah,
you've never been outside of
I've never been outside of China.
What was that like?
I'm to be honest, I'm just lying down in a hotel room.
It didn't, you know, feel that.
I didn't feel like, where am I?
But were you like, what the hell, dad?
Yeah,
this is some bullshit.
Yeah,
like, I've been stuck in this hellhole for a decade and a half.
But you know, like, as a child, you know, like, you never met your father, right? But you don't feel like that's your father, you know, it's
sure.
like a stranger, you know, like.
Strangers. So was it awkward?
It was kind of awkward, but like, he was really good to me.
He was nice.
Yeah, he was really, really nice. You know, he's trying to like get me anything. And first time in a farmer's market in China, right? I see a banana, and I was like, oh yeah, I've seen, you know, one of those in like the cartoons, you know, in North Korea.
Yeah.
I picked it up. I bite it off.
With
I just
peel.
Try to eat it with a peel on, right?
Uh-huh.
And my dad just laughing his ass off, like, you shouldn't supposed to eat like that. You should peel it off. And I was like, I was tasting it. It's so bitter.
Yeah,
you know? Like,
not good with the peel.
Why is people eating banana? It's not, I don't understand, you know? But yeah, that was like first, like a stupid thing that ever.
I could just see you be like, oh man. Oh yeah. Man, these things are overrated.
Yeah, it's
who's the idea? This thing
it looks so much better in the cartoon.
Yeah.
The next day.
Yeah.
You guys go out?
Yeah. So the next day we arrived at my father's place, right? 12 hours away. I got to my dad's place, and then I feel like I was like a child again, you know, because a lot of times, like, I had to grow up a lot faster than any other kids because of, I had to, you know, I had to be the man, you know, like, I have to be, like, I had to grow up to nurse my mom and live on my own, live on the street for a while.
So you were homeless for a while?
I was homeless too, because, like, when I was living with my aunt, my aunt and my uncle, they fought like a lot every single night.
Well, she sounds like a horrible person.
Yeah.
She blackmailed your dad.
Yeah.
To kill you. So, yeah. No kidding. That's yeah. She didn't get along with her husband either.
So, the argument that ended me kicked out, you know, from the house. Half the year, I was living on a street.
What is that like? I know we're moving backwards, but this is important.
Yeah, it's
put a pin in being in China with your dad and go back to being homeless in North Korea.
Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, being a homeless in North Korea, it's not easy. You know, it's like life or death. You know, like even though you have a candy in your mouth, you know, but somebody come punch me in the like cheek and just take it. You have something. You know,
you have something,
but you have to like spend it or you have to eat it as soon as possible. Otherwise, they're gonna come in. Yeah, take it away.
And take it. Yeah. And you were, what, 12, 13?
Yeah, I was like 12 and
12 and a half. Wow.
It's always like a fight. It's like a war, you know? You have to be prepared to like throw a punch like every single day. Because like there's always a guy trying to come to like me and like trying to take the things away from me. Either I don't have anything, right? Or they're just going to come to you and just they're going to beat the shit out of me.
Where are you living? On the street?
Just on the street. Yeah, on the street. Like a train station. Like a nearby boiler.
Oh, near the boiler to stay warm?
Yeah, to stay warm because it's also winter.
It was winter. Oh my God, that's rough. Korean winters are no joke.
Yeah. If you pee, right, it's going to froze from the bottom. If you spit out the saliva, you know, it's kind of...
Freezes mid-air.
Yeah, and then sort of...
Jeez.
It's that cold, yeah.
Is this common, homelessness in North Korea?
Yeah, it's a lot common. It's
so like, there are a lot of other people in this area?
Yeah, right. So it's homeless. Really competitive, you know.
Wow. So it's other people without homes, as you put it, doing battle with to stay alive? Okay.
Let's go back to China.
Go back to China.
Go back to China.
You've already been through all this stuff.
That's I've already been through all this stuff.
So was it a relief then to be in China?
Yeah, it was just so much relief because like, I feel like I can have like my future, right? I can have my dream, you know. And my dream promised the hope, you know, and hope promised tomorrow.
What was your dream at that point?
Just living my life normal.
To have a normal life.
Yeah, have a normal life.
Anywhere.
You know, anywhere.
But North Korea.
Just not North Korea, you know, because I'm going to like, you know, PC bar, you know, it's like an arcade, you know. I'm going to
PC
arcade.
Bar?
Yeah, PC bar, yeah, you know, like I go there, you know, I play computer, you know, and I play like arcade, you know, Street Fighter, King of Fighter, you know, and all those kind of stuff that older kids do, you know, are playing arcade. So I was living the dream in China, right? I was so happy, you know, and because like I don't have to beg for a place to sleep overnight, or I don't have to beg for a food from the strangers on the street, right? I was living my life in freedom for a moment. But unfortunately, Chinese government didn't recognize North Koreans as refugees, and they captured me. The Chinese citizen reported me to the government.
Somebody in your neighborhood?
Yeah, somebody in my neighborhood.
How did they find out?
Because like they've been keeping an eye on like new like arrivals, right? And then they see a kid, small kid, dark, you know, because like skinny. Chinese kids are fat, you know. Yeah. They're super like pale because they've been eating really well. But like, I'm really dark, short, you know, like they could tell by my eyes, you know, like I'm rolling like trying to steal something, you know. Always alert, you know, because like Chinese kids, like they don't do that. Yeah, I stood out like pretty like strong.
So the other people in the neighborhood picked up on that?
Yeah, they picked up on it.
And they called the...
Yeah, they called the police.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and then 9 months later, in 2009 January, police came to our house with a gun, like with a pistol. There's like 8 or 9 of them. And then like when I looked down, there's like a black horse just like surrounded like the apartment. That was scary. Like these guys, you know, there's a... barges into a room, having a gun in their hand and like looking in the rooms. And then they handcuffed me and then they took me to the jail.
How old were you?
I was 15.
Was your dad there?
My dad was there, but he couldn't do anything because he has no way of proving that I'm his son.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And you know, I remember the day I lost all hope. You know, I was in the back of a Chinese police truck chained to like a couple of other North Koreans. You know, in Chinese jail, you know, I'm in a Chinese jail right now with like a couple of all of the North Koreans. And like the living situations, you know, like the people that how they fed us, it's like they've fed us with like the food from leftovers, you know, food, like leftover food from the guards. And then like finally it's a deporting day. So I was in the Chinese jail for like 2 weeks. And then it's the day that finally we're getting deported to North Korea. And you know, like we turned a corner and I could see the North Korean border in the distance. And I was so scared and afraid that I might be in big trouble, you know, as soon as I step back into North Korea. And I knew that, you know, I'm gonna be in big trouble. And then the truck rolled to a stop at the border and the guards were screaming at me to get off the truck. And, you know, I was so scared. They were, like, treating us like an animal. And then, yeah, so I got onto another, like, a Jeep with a couple of the North Koreans, and then we got transported. Sorry.
It's okay.
Transport. Yeah, transported to like other, like a interrogation, first interrogation part, mm-hmm. right? And then, yeah, I got to the first interrogation part because like there are so many people, so many North Korean defectors that are in the jail. They have no place to put us in, right? So I had to stand right in front of the cell, right? In 2009, January. And then, like, you have to know, like, if you get caught in China, like, if you get caught nearby the border, it's fine. And like, oh, they're like, so after the interrogation, right? Or if you're trying to go to China for just looking for the food in the border, that's fine. You know, like, oh yeah, just go to the labor camp for 4 years and you're fine.
I wouldn't throw that in the fine column. 4 years of labor camp.
I mean, yeah, that's like the punishment, right? They don't kill you, right? But like, just like a, basically a death sentence, you know, because it's really hard to survive in a labor camp for 4 years. But if you get caught deeper inside of China, which is Mongolia, you know, which is like around like really south of China, that's a red flag, which means you're moving towards somewhere, which is going to South Korea, right?
Mm, so it's worse.
It's worse.
Now, you were 12 hours away from the border.
But I was still within.
You were still within.
Yeah, within like the like safe range, you know, safe region. And then I was standing right in front of the cell, and this one lady, she bites off her vein. And she bleed to death.
She bit her
Wide open. Cause like she got caught in Mongolia. Uh-huh. And the government knows that like she's trying to defect to like South Korea. So they wouldn't let her go. I heard like stories about her, like from the fellow like prisoners. Like she was there for a long time. You know, and she was getting interrogated like every single day for a couple of hours. They wouldn't let her sleep. They wouldn't like let her eat. And then the office got cleared out. So in the jail, there is no room in the jail. So they couldn't put us in the jail. So they put me in a separate office. So this is a boibu. Boibu stands for secret police in North Korea.
Oh, secret
it's like a
police.
Secret police.
Do you even know where that was?
Yeah, it's in Namyang. It's in right across the border. Yeah, but
it's near the border. There's like a special.
Yeah, special like place. Interrogation part. And then I'm sitting in the office and across the room, I hear a scream, you know, like guys like, oh my God, my legs are broken. Oh, please forgive me. My legs are broken. My ribs are broken. I'm bleeding to death. You know, I'm like hearing all the screams, you know, and I'm like terrified. Mm-hmm. Like that's going to be me. Like they're going to kill me. But luckily I was only 15. I didn't get beaten. Yeah, that bad. Just like slapped me, you know, like, kicked me, you know, stomach for a couple of times.
What are they trying to do? Are they trying to punish you?
No.
Or are they trying to get information from you?
They're trying to get information from
us. What sort of stuff do they want to know?
They ask about everything. Like everything, like literally everything. What did you do in China? What did you eat? What did you feel? What did you see?
What did you feel?
Yeah, what did you feel in China? Like, okay, so you've seen like a couple of social medias. You know, how did you feel about that? You know, like you've seen like people talking about Kim Jong-il. How do you feel about that? Like you've seen a lot of like cars. You've seen a lot of like buildings, a lot of tall buildings. How do you feel about that?
What are they trying to suss out in those questions?
It's like, I learned that Kim Jong-il is bad. That's right. The things that they want to get.
Because if you say that, then they're going to punish you more.
They're going to kill us. Yeah. Wow. If you say that, there's no way out. If you say that, but I have to say, like, I know what to say, you know, like, I know, like, because of the things that I've seen in China, but like, I couldn't say.
You knew how to lie.
Yeah. I knew, like, I know how to, like.
So what do you say? Like, oh, I saw capitalism and how it ruins people.
I mean, I mean, like, I saw, yeah. So like.
The Bad Boys 2 was not as good as Bad Boys 1.
I've learned that Will Smith is awesome, but not as awesome as Kim Jong-il.
Yeah, right?
Those Soviet movies.
He's the badass, you know. Yeah.
He should be in Bad Boys 3.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I was a child, right? So they didn't like really ask me that questions like a lot, like multiple times. They just like, let's just get it over with.
They were trying to get it over with.
Yeah. Just like,
and oh, you're 15, right?
I was 15. I was like, oh yeah, I was just living with my dad. Oh, I was just, I don't know. I don't know. Like, I don't know. I don't know. Like, I don't know. And they're like, what do you mean you don't know? And just get up and punch me in the face for a couple of times. And then, like, 20 days, I was in there.
You're there for 3 weeks.
Yeah, I was in there for 3 weeks.
They're questioning you for 3 weeks.
Yeah, 3 weeks.
Charles, I just have to ask you. You seem really brave, I guess is the word, and smart. Do you think you were always that way? Or had you been through so much stuff already that you sort of knew how to handle a situation like that?
I mean, like, when it comes to your life or death, I think that's, like, in people's instinct. You know, first thing that they would do is, like, trying to protect your life. Sometimes I heard, like, people, like when they're in a dying situation, it's like, oh, please kill me. You know, I don't think that's something that they would say. They're like, oh, please save me. I don't know. I think maybe it's in my blood. I don't know. But, like, I believe that everyone could do it. Like, it's written in DNA. You know, it's written in code, you know, so, like, you can't escape that. But I think, yeah, if it comes to life or death, you will do it.
So at that point, you knew you wanted to survive, so you were doing whatever you had to
do. Yeah, whatever I had to do, right? You know, most of, like, 15-year-old kids, you know, American kids are sophomore in high school, right?
Yeah.
You know, they go to, like, sports practices, you know, they're busy with, like, sports practices, you know, and, like, doing everything, you know, sophomore thingy.
Yeah, the hardest thing in your life are wind sprints on the football team.
Yeah, and a little acne or something.
Yeah, yeah. Some
SATs.
My Wi-Fi is so slow.
Yeah, oh, I cracked my phone screen.
And you're in a secret police.
So, I was in a labor camp. So right after 20 days, I got transported to a re-educational detention center.
Are they actually teaching you things there, or are they just punishing you there?
They are brainwashing us. Right. So what you do is you work there as long as they want you to work there. Right. And then at night, they'll force us to recite the rules of the camp. Right. So at age of 15, I was in a detention center working like 18 hours. I don't know, 12, 16, 18, eating like 150 kernels of corn a day for 9 months. You know, I thought they're going to release me pretty soon because, like, I was only 15. And that's what they told me too, you know. And I was told that I'll be there for only a couple of weeks because I was so young, right? I was only 15. I worked really hard for the couple of, like, weeks, right? Because I didn't want it to get bitten again.
Yeah.
Right? And months passed and I was not released. In that detention center, I was only allowed to eat 150 kernels of corn a day, right? And I started to lose weight, and I could see my rib cage. And I had to do, like, whatever I had to do to survive. And one morning, we were marching in our rows to my work site, and on the side, I saw dry vomit.
Dry vomit?
Dry vomit on the row. Somebody, like, I don't know, somebody sick or somebody drunk that threw up. And then I saw dried rice and the vomit. And I was so hungry that I got on my hands and knees and began picking the rice out of the dry vomit. And
so you picked the rice out of the dry vomit?
Yeah. And I ate it.
Oh, wow.
It was like a sand, a dirt, you know. And I didn't stop eating the rice, vomited rice, until the beating from the guards were too unbearable. And at night, the guards would storm into our cells and force us to recite the rules of the camp. And if you misquoted even one rule, like, they would, like, force to stand all night reciting the rules until work began the next morning.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. God. What are the rules of the camp?
I would never talk about life outside of North Korea. I'll never talk about bad things about Kim Jong-il, what I see, how I feel. I would never talk about anything that I saw in China. I will just live my life like a bug.
These are the rules of the camp?
Yeah. You have to know these rules. You have to memorize those rules.
How many are there?
There's like I can't remember. There's like 40.
So it's a list of 40 sort of principles, right?
Yeah, principles. Like, there's a wall like that. There's like a wall.
A poster on the wall.
Yeah, a poster on the wall. That's like the size is twice as big as this room. And then there's like 20 people, 30 people, you know, lying in the floor.
This room is like 10 by 15. And there's 20 people in there?
Double as this size.
Oh, double as this size.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, double as this still. Room. Yeah. And like, we sit in a rows, and then we face those like the posts, and then we recite, oh, like, I'll never do this, I'll never do that, I'll never do this, you know, I'll never talk about life outside of North Korea, I'll be a good citizen, I'll never escape, you know.
Is this what they mean by re-education?
Yeah, re-education.
They're basically trying to
work us off.
Right. And what's going through your mind while you're reciting those principles?
I was starving.
You were just trying to survive?
Yeah, trying to survive.
Was there any part of you that thought, maybe I'll actually follow these principles? Or in your mind, you're like, this is bullshit.
This is bullshit.
You knew it was bullshit.
Yeah.
Even though you were hungry.
I was so angry. I was like hangry, you know, like, I was like,
it's like a new level of anger. Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to get the hell out of here and I'm going to escape again. I'm going to escape until I'll die trying again.
Whoa. You know, like, in the camp, you thought.
In the camp, right? Because like we're working every single day for 9 months, no rest from 7 a.m. to whenever they say stop. It could be like 1 a.m. It could be 12 a.m. It could be 11 p.m. Like no matter what, right? Eating 50 pieces of kernel per meal, right? So they have a job for counting those corns. Right. And for 9 months, nothing else.
They have a job.
Yeah.
Somebody's job is
to count those corns. Right.
That just pissed you off.
Yeah. And then the guards, right? We are working in a field, whatever it is. We are building a concrete, you know, we are, building a building, you know, we are farming, we are constructing, we are on a forest, cutting down the tree. They tell us every day, you escape again. We don't care, but don't get caught.
Guards
are telling you,
yeah.
Don't get caught.
If you get caught, you're going to die. This is what happens if you get caught. We can't stop you. We can't prevent you from escaping it. But we can do these things to you once you get caught, right? And I'm listening that every day. And like the main principle is like if you escape, if you get caught, you're dead. Basically, you're dead. So like don't have that thought. That's what they're trying to tell us.
But in your mind, somehow that got translated as I'm going to do it anyway.
Because
this place is terrible.
Yeah. I mean, that's like basically everyone's mind.
Everybody in the camp felt that
yeah,
way.
Yeah. Everybody felt in that way. Cause like there was like another like weak guy, you know, I was the youngest in the like detention center. Right. And there is like another like weak, you know, like there's always like a head and there's a tail. Right. And I was below tail, but the tail always telling me like, you know, I'm going to get out of here. And I'm going to do it again. And then a lot of people actually feel that way too. And then, funny enough, I was in a international refugee camp in Southeast Asia. And then I met this dude from the detention center.
You ran into somebody?
Yeah.
You were in detention
ran into someone. Because I remember that guy because he stole my shoes. Right? Because I had a pretty good shoes. When I got into the detention center,
China.
Yeah, from China,
and
right?
So he wanted your Chinese shoes.
Yeah, so it was really new, you know, and it was really like comfortable. But that guy saw my shoes and he liked it. He's like, can I have the shoes? I'm like, no, you can't. Like, what am I going to wear? You know, like, he's going to be like, you can't wear mine. And his shoes like fell apart. And I'm like, no, you know, but he took it anyway. And then he told me his story much later on, like, yeah, your shoes helped me a lot, you know. So while he was, you know, doing the interrogation, right, he stole a paperclip and he swallowed it.
Ooh.
Right? And then he went to the bathroom, he pooped it out, and then he kept it, right? He kept the paperclip. And then while, like, he's done working at the, I don't know, he's stayed for like a year in a detention center. While he was transferring to like other facility, transferring to his like hometown, he was handcuffed around the table in the train, right? And then while the police officer, right, their police officer who's like moving them, while they fell asleep, he took out the paperclip.
And he picked his handcuffs?
Yeah, he picked his handcuffs and he escaped.
Wow.
Right? He escaped. He escaped to China again, and he worked in China about a year. And then at the same time, I'm not going to spoil. Anyway.
Are you going to come back to that?
Yeah, I'm going to come back to that.
Right. Okay. You're already like, this is the best story.
Yeah. Amazing. And then,
incredible.
And then 9 months later, I was finally released from the labor camp, from the detention center, because I have lost so much weight that I was worthless worker. You know, I couldn't even lift my arm or even stand up. You know, I was like a bones and skins.
So there was no point.
there's no point of keeping me, right? Mm-hmm. So like one day, like this, the head of the detention center comes out and like counting our heads, right? How many, like, and then he's like screaming, yelling at these kids, like these guards, right? What the heck are you guys doing? Send them home. We don't need them. You know, like, we don't need them to work for me. You know, like, why aren't you doing your job? You send those guys home. You know, you send those guys to like whatever they belongs, you know? And then next day, two police officers shows up and then they took me away.
Wow. What job were you doing in the camp?
I was doing everything. I was doing like literally everything that adults do.
What kind of work?
It's everything. Literally everything.
What does
like
that mean?
Construction.
Okay.
Building bricks, building concrete, farming.
So you're outside?
Outside. Always like, we are always working outside of the camp, right? Let's say, for example, it's raining. You can't work. There's no work, right? Then you go, you're still working within campus, right? So there is a bunch of sandbags and bricks.
Sandbags.
Yeah, sandbags and bricks, right? There's like a pile of sandbags. And then you move the sandbags point A to B in the morning. And in the afternoon, you move that back sandbag from B to A.
Oh, they're just having you do work, even it worthless stuff, just
yeah,
to keep
worthless,
you guys.
Yeah,
how much of the work was meaningless and how much was actually supposed to accomplish something?
Like 99% of the work that we did was actually building, you know, like constructions and farmings and
real stuff.
Yeah, real stuff. And like 1% was like sometimes like it rains, you know.
I see. They just wanted to keep you busy.
Yeah, keep us busy, you know, so that we don't think about, you know, like escaping again. You know, that's their method.
There's 80 to 120,000 people in these labor camps.
There's all different kinds of levels of labor camps, right? So the first level is re-education or training camp, right?
Is that what you were in?
No, I was in a detention center.
So that's another level.
That's another level. Okay. That's like really, it's like a detention center for North Korean defectors. So where they get transferred to their hometown and they get judgment and then they go to, re-educational, labor camp, which is like a 4 years, right? And then there is like a re-educational and there is like a work re-educational, like a labor camp for like 6 months or something. That's the lowest for 6 months. And then, there is like a 4 years of a re-educational camp and there is a political labor camp. Political labor camp is the highest. You never get out of there. You're born there, you die there. I wasn't there. I'm not from political labor camp, but I'm in a North Korean defector, like re-educational detention center.
Okay.
So I got out of there, and then I went back to my stepbrother's house. That was 2009 October. So I was in the detention center for 9 months. And then I spent like months trying to regain my strength.
So you're about 16?
I was around 16. Okay. Yeah. But you have to know there's like, I was born 1994, right? And then, cause like Korean age in United States is different. Cause they count it.
1 year old.
One year old. Like, no, when you're in their stuff, they count it from the stomach.
Right.
Right. Mm. So when you're born, it's already 1 year.
Oh, okay.
Right. And
so you're really 15.
Yeah. I was at the 15.
Right.
Actually, when I got released. And then I spent like months trying to regain my strength. And after spending like months trying to regain my strength, I needed to find a job. Without any money, it was like impossible to support like myself.
Was your stepbrother welcoming?
He wasn't welcoming. I mean, he was doing fine, but in 2010, there was a currency devaluation happening in North Korea. I'm not sure if you know.
Yeah.
And it killed like thousands of people.
Because the money that they were saving and running for their businesses just became worthless.
Exactly. So like a lot of like our neighbors, you know, committed suicide because like one day they had something, one day they don't have anything and they have no hope of living. So my brother lost all the business. So I got kicked out and then I had to support myself. So I needed to find a job.
So you're on your own again.
I'm on my own.
Do you have a place to live?
I don't, but I found it.
Okay.
Like where I'm from, like the coal mine is really popular. And I had to lie my age to get in there, right? So I'm like, oh, I'm 18, you know, like I cannot work.
I find it really ironic that they're concerned with child labor laws and literally no other aspect of your life.
Yeah. And meanwhile, he just got out of a detention center / labor camp.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're old enough to go to a labor camp and be basically work tortured, but you can't, you're too young to work in this coal mine.
For a proper amount of time. Yeah. Yeah. But you got this job.
I got this job.
Did you just wander into a coal mine?
Yeah. No. So I started working in a coal mine when I was paid only in rice. Right, 6 days a week, I would enter the cold, damp tunnels of the mine. And most of the boys that working in the mine were my age. We'll push 1,000-pound steel core cart miles into the mine.
You're pushing the mine cart?
Mm-hmm. So mine coal cart, right? Coal cart, it's like empty coal cart. It's already like 1,000-pound.
1,000 pounds.
Yeah, because it's all metal.
Right.
Right. It's all metal.
And you guys are pushing it
into the minefield.
So they're not mechanized.
They're not mechanized.
They're like man.
Manual. Everything is manual because like there's no power.
And it's all young guys, 15, yeah, so
like,
14.
Yeah. So the youngest I've seen is like 12.
12.
And then the oldest I've seen is like 80.
Yeah. 80-year-old man.
Yeah, 80-year-old man.
And they're paying you guys in rice.
Yeah.
Is that common?
That's really common. Yeah. They don't pay us with like, but they provide housing. They provide meals, 3 meals a day.
Okay.
And then at the end of the month, they will pay us 30 kilograms of rice per month.
So it's just slavery.
Basically.
It's like subsistence, basically. They're just keeping you fed and housed.
Yeah, fed and housed. Yeah.
So you were in the coal mine for how long?
Yeah, for about a year, you know. And within that year, like I have made a lot of friends, you know. I was like hanging out with them, you know, having really good time, you know, like with, it's all like my age, you know, it's like we were like at night, you know, we would go nuts, you know, we would drink, you know, we would party, you know.
Where'd you get alcohol?
They feed us.
Oh, they give you rice, they give you.
Cause like when you breathe coal in your lungs,
yeah.
The only thing that it could wash away is alcohol.
I'm not sure about the science on that, but I'm pretty sure they're just getting you drunk so that you forget that you have coal dust in your lungs.
Really?
Yeah. I don't think, because when you swallow things, it doesn't go into your lungs.
But like when you breathe, right?
Probably, yeah, it's like true. A disinfectant, yeah. Though, maybe. That's what they mean.
I mean, I'm pretty sure they're just getting you drunk so you don't complain about the fact that everybody's got
either way, you guys didn't mind.
Yeah, we didn't mind.
Yeah, you're 15.
Right?
This is so wild. So this was not a bad period for you, really. I mean, I know it's not ideal, but like...
I feel like relatively,
this is
way better than getting tortured by guards at a camp.
I'm guessing this was a step up for you.
Yeah, this is a step up for me, but I lost a lot of friends.
You lost a lot.
You lost him.
Because the coal mine accident, you know, cave-ins. Sure. And like sometimes the coal cart will flip, right? And then sometimes it will land on people. If you got out of the coal mine, right? And then sometimes my rain boots, it's leaking. So I can't tell it's a blood or it's a coal water, you know, because it's so sticky. It could be blood, you know. You know what I mean? Like, cause like sometimes you'll land it on people, you'll crush people, you know, there's like people losing arms, legs because of the coal mine accidents. You know, there's like a coal cart, right? Imagine like with a coal, you know, it's like 5 kilograms, 1,000 kilograms of like coal, right? Wet coal, right? Mm-hmm. And then plus 1,000 pounds of steel coal cart. So it's kind of, it's a 2,000 pound. Imagining that kind of like heavy weight is landing on people. Like, it'll just crush you.
This was like a regular occurrence.
It's not regular. It's
but it
not,
happened.
It happened like often, you know, like cave-ins are really often because a lot of people want to make money, you know, so they claim that they know how to set up the frame in the coal mine, but they really don't. You know, they just want to get paid more. If you know how to do that, they will pay you a little bit more.
Right. They're trying to get out as much coal as possible.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
The so safety. Like, I'm assuming there are no like safety regulations.
No.
There's no such thing.
Yeah, there's no such thing. It's like, just as long as you have a helmet, you have like a flashlight,
right.
And you have a rain boots, you have a glove, you're safe.
That's the preparation.
Go away,
wow.
So these guys, they're men, I'm assuming.
Yeah, they're all men. Job. No, I mean like there's women's too.
There are women.
A lot of women's.
Oh, okay. So men and women.
Yeah,
men
and women.
You guys are hanging out.
We're hanging out
after hours.
After hours, drinking, you know, and partying, you know, watching movies, you know, and like.
So you can watch movies at this point too.
Yeah, yeah. It's like illegally, you know, but coal mine is like the place where like every like, you know, like criminal, you know, like with like a bright mind that, you know, like people with like, oh, who want to party, you know, they come in. Right. And then they bring like South Korean dramas. They bring like foreign movies, you know.
Wait, I'm sorry. Why does coal mining attract former criminals in North Korea?
I mean, like young millennials, you know, they do that a lot.
They like that job.
Yeah, they like that job because like they get paid. Right. And they get paid rice and then they can sell that rice and then they can make money out of it. You know, for example, like people without any family, it's really a good deal for them. You know, because I have no family to protect. I have no family to pay. I get fit like 3 times a day, right? And I have like, have a night off. And then I get, every single month, I get 30 kilograms of rice. And in North Korea at the time, like a per kilograms of rice was like 5,000 won, right? So imagining you're selling 30 kilograms of rice and they're getting that as a cash.
Is that what you did?
That's what I did too.
So you became an entrepreneur.
Yeah, entrepreneur. Kind of. Yeah.
So you're like arbitraging your rice rations.
Yeah, yeah. But at the same time, like I had a lot of like memories of, you know, China, you know, being free, you know, and watching all those people, you know, like injured, you know, and people who didn't make it out. And like I thought about it like, oh my God, that's going to be me one day.
Right. It's only a matter of time.
So sooner or later, I'm going to be like that. And, you know, I knew how hard it is, like, it is to escape North Korea without any money or food. And I knew that if I was caught, I could be killed this time because I'm, like, this is second time escaping, you know, so there is no mercy. But those kind of risks overweighted working in the dark coal mine every day until it was my turn to lose a limb or die, right? So which one is worth it?
Yeah, you're like, do I stay here and possibly die or grow old doing this crazy job, or do I try to get free?
Yeah, try to get
free. So while you're working at the mine and selling the rice to make a little extra money, in the back of your mind, you're already planning?
Yeah, planning on like escaping.
So Jason, I know you weren't in the room for this one. What do you think so far?
Oh my God, this is one of those stories that anytime I'm having a bad day, feeling sorry for myself, thinking things are just so terrible, I'm just going to go back and listen to this because it could be so much worse.
Right? Yeah. You've just finished part one here. Part two, there's more. There's plot twists galore. This is just an incredible story. And I'll tell you, I had nightmares after doing this show. And so did Gabriel and so did Jen. We all had nightmares after this. It's just nuts. And it gets even more intense in part two. Great big thank you to Charles. He is going to be back with us in a couple of days with part two. And if you want to know how I managed to book all these great people, manage my relationships with hundreds/thousands of really busy people using systems and tiny habits, check out our level one course, which is free over at advancedhumandynamics.com/level1. The problem with putting stuff like this off is that we're not able to make up for lost time when it comes to relationships and networking. And the number one mistake students and entrepreneurs make is postponing this type of stuff and not digging the well before they get thirsty. And once you need that relationship, you are way too late. The drills are all designed to take a few minutes a day. It's the type of habit that we can ignore only at our own peril. This is the stuff I wish I knew a decade ago. It's not fluff. It's crucial. And it's at advancedhumandynamics.com/level1. Speaking of relationships, tell me your number one takeaway here from Charles so far. I'm at Jordan Harbinger on both Twitter and Instagram, where I post videos and photos and fun stuff a lot these days. And don't forget, if you want to learn how to apply everything you heard here from Charles, make sure you go grab the worksheets also in the show notes at jordanharbinger.com/podcast. This episode was produced and edited by Jason DeFilippo. Show notes by Robert Fogarty. Special thanks to Gabriel Mizrahi for joining me on this one. Worksheets by Caleb Bacon. Booking, Back Office, and Last Minute Miracles by Jen Harbinger. And I'm your host, Jordan Harbinger. The fee for the show is you share it with friends when you find something useful, which hopefully is in every single episode. So please share the show with those you love and even those you don't. Lots more in the pipeline. Very excited to bring it to you. In the meantime, do your best to apply what you hear on the show so you can live what you listen. And we'll see you next time.